Blog Talk Radio.
And for the next hour, you know, we're kind of like your neighborhood sports reporters. We're kind of like the guys at the barbershop. We want to invite you to be part of the show. Feel free to call in and talk to us. We're at 347-989-0844. Our format, we just kind of toss it in the middle of the table and talk about whatever is hitting our mind. And so I'll just start to show off and toss to Marcus. I know you got something on your mind. And just put the first thing on the middle of the table for us to talk about tonight, Marcus.
All right, man. I'm going to throw it out there really quick. You know, we've all been watching the playoffs and paying attention to how everything is playing out, how everything is unfolding. And, you know, Cleveland took another L tonight in unflattering fashion, losing pretty handily to Boston. And now they're down 3-2 and they're headed back to Beantown for what could be a closeout game six. So just thinking about that, you know, and thinking about that the possibility of Cleveland not only being eliminated in this round, but facing in the next round an Orlando team that is looking really tough. Now, I said on the show before, I still don't have a lot of faith in Orlando. Orlando still has a lot to prove to me. I mean, they faced a Miami Heat team that was, wait, did they face? No, they didn't go against Miami in the first round. Orlando went against, who they beat? Charlotte. So they faced basically a playoff version in the first round. That was the franchise's first trip. And, you know, Larry Brown usually takes a year or two to really get a team, you know, in with his program. So, you know, they caught them and swept them. And then Atlanta was a what I like to call a professional AAU team, where you had a bunch of cats just going for self every other possession, taking turns, going one-on-one. So, you know, Orlando did what they were supposed to do. They took care of both of those teams. But right now, Orlando looks really good. They look really good. Now, they still got a lot of questions to answer for me, but they look decent right now. They look like, as far as the teams that's left, they look like the toughest out. So if Cleveland does get past Boston, will they get past Orlando? Who knows? But let's say that scenario plays out where they don't get past Boston or they don't get past Orlando, and LeBron misses the finals again after having the best record in the league for the second straight year, after having one of the best statistical seasons of all time, and this man still can't get to the finals with this franchise, with this team, what does that mean at the end of the day for his future in Cleveland? Is he going to stay? Is he going to leave? You know, that's going to be a legitimate question. And what does that mean for his legacy? I mean, I have a hard time convincing myself that Bron ain't going to get a championship in his career. If I had to put a $100 bet down on whether or not this man will win a championship in his career, I'm going to make that bet and put money down that he's going to win that championship. But at the same time, what's up?
He has gotten it done all year, and LeBron is LeBron, and he is going to win a championship somewhere at some point. Before we get into him, you know, where is he going to get within this series? You know, he's playing a Boston team. These guys are veterans, and you have to realize that. They won it, you know. They've got their championship. So winning the regular season doesn't mean a whole lot to those guys. They don't have anything to prove. LeBron is still young, and he's still trying to be the heir apparent to Jordan and make his noise. But the reality of it is that when they get to the playoffs like this, you have a team in Boston that they've been there before. And Orlando's going to find that out, too. I think it would be a better series if Cleveland went against Orlando in the sense that, you know, it should be exciting basketball. But I think that Boston realizes that they know exactly what they have to do to get through these series, to get through these playoffs, and they're not afraid of anything. And they're not shook up. You know, so you know, first and foremost, you know, this might, you know, they may go to Beantown and Cleveland may get sent home. You know, simply because they're playing a veteran team. These guys, you know, they're not afraid of
them. And
they're not
this.
Afraid of LeBron.
I would say this, that the Cavs remind me of, you know, that the Gary Payton Sonics, you know, they look good in the regular season. But you knew when you watched their offense that they weren't doing anything that would make you seem like they're going to be able to score points in the playoffs. It seems like every time, it's kind of like, you know, when Tyson was fighting in a later career, you know, they tried to get him to do certain things, but at the first time he got hit, he just resorted back to the old stuff and exposed himself. It seems like every time they get in a tough situation, they go to the things that are not going to yield positive results in the playoffs. You know, they go to a you know, offensive sets that where people are standing around, there's not a lot of movement. They do things that don't, and it makes you question, you know whether or not, you know, they're getting the coaching or they're developing their offense in a way, you know, that they can do it. Is it something that, you know, LeBron, you know, it makes you feel like LeBron's got to play with the ball in his hands. You're not using him in the post because he hasn't really developed his post game. You know, there's certain things that allow you to put pressure on teams, and I just don't see Cleveland running that, especially against a veteran team like Boston, you know, who they got crafty fellas who can make things happen. I don't see the Cavs doing the kinds of things that lead to championships.
I think the problem that the Cavs have is that they like to spectate. They sit there and they watch LeBron all year, you know, perform his magic, and they sit back in awe. And none of the other players really step up to establish themselves. You know, it's LeBron and a whole team of role players. And so, you know, now they get to the playoffs, and nobody gets through the playoffs, you know, standing there watching one guy do everything. LeBron's got to score 38 points for them to win a ball game. And when he doesn't, they don't win. And teams like Boston are looking at that going, he's not going to score 38 points every night. We're not going to let him score 38 points every night. You know, they're not going to get through Boston with that mentality. And I think that that's what's happened with Cleveland last year and this year. You know, on any given night, you know, when there isn't a lot on the table, when there isn't a lot at stake, it's a good night to sit and watch LeBron play. I mean, he's exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. But you aren't going to get anywhere. You're not going to go through a seven-game series, you know, being a spectator. And then when they're asked to do something, they really don't know how to respond. Mm-hmm. And the guys in Boston, they realize that if one player is not playing well, the other player has to step up.
Is this an indictment of the supporting cast? Because, I mean, Mo Williams is an all-star. Antoine Jameson is an all-star.
Sure.
And this is the team that Danny Ferry has given LeBron. So does he say, you know, you can't put a team around me of guys who are going to run with me? You got me.
Well,
you got guys
Antoine
who are watching.
Antoine Jameson just showed up. You know, he just got there. So, you know, you have to. You have to, you know, they really haven't gelled. They really haven't, they came in and played a role and never really established what that role was going to be. When it got down to the tight situation. And so you have guys, like I say, you know, they would be a better matchup to me for Orlando, you know, just for entertainment purposes. Because Orlando's much the same way. You know, they don't have the depth that Boston has.
But it seems like, you know, I don't know if it's an indictment of the coach, you know, or I mean, it's got to be it's a partnership between an all-star superstar and your coach when it comes to you know, what sacrifices. And if you look at L.A. and you think about Kobe's development, you know, I was talking to a colleague. He broke it down, and he was just saying, you know, thinking about, you know, Kobe can post, he can play, he's worked on spacing, getting out there shooting three, going up dribbles. So there's things that you know, and they have an offense that allows him to be interchangeable. And has LeBron, you know, developed his game to a point where, you know, if you see LeBron in a post, that creates a different kind of reaction. It creates opportunities for double teams come in, for your spot-up shooters. He's always either coming off a screen. He's always doing it off the dribble. And so it's not creating, you know, maybe the kind of pressure that could allow his teammates to get in. So is it something that, you know, Mike Brown can do? You know, is he a championship coach? Because it's not just the parts, but is the coach able to influence how they play? You know, has he done all he can do with this team? I mean, those are the kind of things that have to be talked about as you try to figure out where this team goes, especially if they get beaten this round. Getting beaten this round is really a loss. It's a disastrous season.
In the last show, if not the first show, about that loss that Kobe had, where I think he may have scored. He may have shot 12 times during the ball game. And didn't score in the first quarter, where he was, you know, trying to set the pace of the game. LeBron doesn't have that problem. LeBron's not going to have that problem. LeBron realizes when he comes out, everything is going to go through him. So it isn't so much that he controls necessarily what Cleveland does. Cleveland doesn't really seem to want to step up when LeBron's having a bad night. And when I mean a bad night is when he isn't that dominating force. And again, look at Boston. Look Boston in the eye. These guys are looking at this team like, we can beat you. This is not a surprise here. Boston, you know, they had their injuries this year, but this is still a Boston championship team. And so they look at this team like, you know, you made noise last year because we didn't. You got to where you were last year because we didn't play the way that we should. And they didn't really play the way that they should perhaps all year because of some of the injuries and some of the things that they went through. But now, relatively healthy, certainly with the experience that they have, they look at this Cleveland team like they got this young guy, and they'll live and die with him.
Yeah.
And all we have to do is negate some of the things that he can do and watch all the other guys stand around and watch it, because they're not stepping up.
So I'm gonna pose this. I'm gonna throw this out there. You're LeBron James. You guys lose to either Boston or Orlando in the next round. What do you do? Do you come back to this team? Do you go chase the money to New York? Do you go to the Nets? Do you go to, you know, do you go join D Wade? I mean, what do you do at this point? What do you do, because in Cleveland this is pretty much their roster.
Right. Right.
They pretty much locked into this crew. So if you're LeBron James, tell me where you go. Where you go? What do you do?
Well, I would say it's a difference between you losing in this round. If you lose this round, this three throws it wide open, because this is very disappointing for them. You know, if they go to the next round and let's say they lose in seven games, that's a different kind of experience. Even though they didn't make it to the finals, There might be some you can salvage, but I think if he loses this round, if they go and lose and basically lose a series in the next game, then that's gonna he's got to do some soul searching. And in my sense is that he didn't really think this scenario was going to be possible, and I think he has to do some soul searching. And it's hard because you can make an argument that Cleveland has made moves when they had to make moves. They brought Jameson in. They've done some things, and what is it? So is this a question of, you know, is this going to be where, you know, Mike Brown, you have to make decisions about the coach? You know, those are the kinds of things that Ferry's going to have to talk about if he's going to keep it.
But I think that's part of it too. I think that any of these moves, came with the blessing of LeBron James, and so he saw it, that the team, and I'm sure that he more or less forced the team to make some of these moves.
I say, but can he find a better situation?
That's the $6 million question. And the other thing is there another coach out there that can sit down and tell him what he really needs? You know, Kobe has that in L.A.
Yeah.
Kobe has that in L.A. You know, the situation in Boston is much that way. Those guys, they put that team together with players that had not won much on their own and welcomed each other in each other's roles. Phoenix, you know, is a happy team. And I just don't know where he's going to go and find that happy team.
And everybody talks about New York, but I'm trying to, you know, other than the Riley and the Van Gundy years, I mean, there's nothing about New York other than, the marketing kit. I mean, but because of what things are global, what is there about New York that's telling you they're making the right moves? If he moves to New York, it's going to be any better. So New York is not, I mean, I don't understand the whole New York. I understand the relationship with Van Gundy, but.
If he ends up in New York, it'll be years before he gets his championship.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He just has to be settled for being paid. He's going to get paid if he goes to New York.
I don't even think he's going to get paid that much more, because who in New York is just discovering LeBron James when he gets there? Like, you know what I mean? Like, who is just discovering this young man? If you ain't figured out who LeBron is by this point in time,
you're living in a hole. And that's where somebody needs to set him down, because when he gets to New York and finds out that he's no better in New York than he was in Cleveland, it's easy to be out in the first or second round in Cleveland. But if New York spends the kind of money that they're talking about having to spend to get LeBron, and he doesn't have any better success, those people are vicious.
Oh yeah.
Those people will chew him up and spit him out. Those people will boo him. And Cleveland needs that home. You know,
Cleveland demonstrated that they would try. They'll work hard at it. And they've been, but there's nothing that has New York made a move, either New Jersey
or the Knicks, have they made a move
that makes sense?
To be trying to get LeBron. New York's move seemed to be clearing enough cap space to lure him there, you know, to bring him in there. What they'll have left over, you know, Chicago is in a position, you know, Chicago is in a position to make LeBron an offer with the talent that they have. You know, that they have a situation that he might have to look at. You know, would it be hard for LeBron to go to Chicago after Michael Jordan was there? Not really. Not with what they've shown that. You know, what Kraus will do for you. He did it for Michael.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, New York is in a bad way, you know, as far as, you know, they set themselves up. If they don't get LeBron, you know, they're in trouble. But, you know, LeBron needs to look at that, and hopefully he has somebody on his side, in his corner, you know, that can mix that whole money piece with the whole winning piece. Because if he doesn't start winning, you know, he's going to be in trouble. He's going to be in trouble ego-wise. He'll make money. He'll be Patrick Ewing. He'll be rich, but he won't be happy.
And the LeBron brand is already global. So, you know, if it's about his brand, he's already global. Marcus, you raised that good question. When you come down and you look at what his options are, and what he can trust. You know, I'm trying to figure out, there's very few places, you know, if they had a room where he can trust that they're going to make that, they're going to be able to create, you know, the kind of, I mean, where I see Cleveland struggling, it's kind of interesting. Shaq had about, 20 points tonight? But it's still, you know, you think about the bigs for Boston, you know, they're active, they're physical, they're, you know, and so there's some things that he just needs. You know, I look at their roster, I'm like, who is the, you know, other than Shaq, who's the banger?
Right.
Like, who's the physical? Who's going to step up and impose their will on the other team other than LeBron? Like, who's that physical person? Like, usually a person like LeBron, a star, they got a physical. Who's your Charles Oakley? Who's that cat that just going to turn the tide a little bit when it looked like it's not working right? Who is that guy? You know, for the Lakers, you know, that's our test. Somebody going to just get nasty and push somebody around, you know, if everything starts going wrong. I don't see that with Cleveland. I don't see that guy
but
kind of being forced.
That's that whole spectator mentality. They sit back and think that it's going to be okay. He missed this shot, he'll make the next one, you know. Or ooh, did you see that dunk? Or, you know, nice fadeaway. But at the end of the game, when it's close, you know, if he doesn't hit that shot, who's grabbing that rebound? Like you say, who's giving that hard foul? Who's showing that emotion?
Yeah.
They spectate, and you can't – this is the playoffs. You can't be a spectator in the playoffs. You have to play.
And one of the things that LeBron's got to figure out whether or not he wants to play more like Magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it might not be 40 points a game. Sometimes he's going to have to be that point forward, that old –
See, Magic had Byron. Magic had – you know, he had Kareem. Magic had cats around him.
Sure.
I don't see none of them cats coming through that tunnel in the queue.
Right. But that's exactly it. Magic, he was afforded the opportunity to sit back. Magic could be the spectator any given night.
Yeah.
LeBron can't. LeBron has to be the superstar. LeBron has to get 35, 40 points.
I mean, Mo Williams is getting ate up by Rondo right now. I don't know if y'all been watching, but Rondo is eating Mo Williams alive.
They're not putting no pressure on him. You know, they're not putting no pressure on him. If you look at the passing lanes that he has, it's just like he's just out there doing what he wanted to do.
They can't stay in front of him.
But at some point, I know this ain't the 80s, but at some point, you know, now I realize I say Tim Duncan mentioned this. He didn't really mean the elbow. But at some point, little guy, you don't need to be in here.
Right.
You know, at some point,
somebody's
got to take that.
But that's Boston in their depth, though. That's Boston being Boston. You know, he can go.
But that's Rondo being Rondo. Who they got outside of Rondo? At the guard position. Who can do that? You got to get physical with him.
Yeah, Boston's in their backcourt and is not very deep as far as point guard. I mean, they got Nate Robinson coming in behind him, and, you know, Rondo and Nate Robinson are two very different players, and they're not near the same caliber. You know, it's just unbelievable, you know, how Boston is really exposing this team. And, you know, I mean, Mo Williams, Delonte West, you know, them dudes got to step up because, I mean, I'm watching the other night, and tonight Rondo didn't really get off, but he had such an impact on the game because they have to play him a certain way because they can't stay in front of him.
Yeah.
And so they got to play off of him. And that's, I mean, once you're doing that and it's messing up the defensive principles, it's obviously having an effect on the defensive principles because they just look out of sync, they look out of whack. And, I mean, maybe this team has hit its ceiling. Maybe this is that, like you were saying, maybe they are the Sonics from 94 to 97.
Sure.
You know, where they're going to be good. They're going to have one of the best records in the league. But as far as getting over that hump and winning the title, it's not going to happen. Or maybe LeBron has that Iverson effect on teammates. Maybe he has that same effect that AI had on his teammates. Where they get so caught up watching his brother that his style of play may not be conducive to building a championship team.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I mean, you said something interesting. Maybe this is hurting their defensive principles. Isn't that what they said about Orlando last year? You know, they couldn't figure out how to handle the screen and roll with the bigs. I mean, your guys were coming off the threes. They're open, and it was all about what's happening with the defensive adjustments. So are we going back? Is the answer going to be the coach?
Well,
you know, is that where we're
going
to end up going?
He always takes the blame anyway. You know, if anybody's asked to leave Cleveland, it will be the coach.
They're not giving up LeBron.
Yeah, you know, so they have to look at what they can do. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get bumped out this year, you know, don't they look at Shaq a lot differently? Don't they look at some of these, you know, Jameson a lot differently? These guys were brought in to win the championship. That's what they brought them in for. If they don't win, you might have to cut them loose.
Yeah, I think you have to. Jameson's 34.
You have to go out and get those players. You think, you know, it was a nice experiment. It didn't work. Let's go. And you can't bring them in next year. You know, it's much like they're saying about Milwaukee. You can't be Milwaukee next year and think you're going to get to the playoffs and make that noise.
Right.
You know, you can't be Cleveland and try to bring these guys back for another chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just, not all of them. You might bring LeBron back, but some of that other payroll has to go.
Yeah.
And maybe they do have to, you know, get somebody just to play Rondo. You know, just to go in there and bang and bump.
Yeah.
You know, and if they don't, you know, it is because the coach didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I want to ask y'all this. Greg, can I ask you a quick question about this? Because we're talking about Cleveland. But what does this say about Doc Rivers? You know, he gets a lot of flack about his ability to X and O, manage a game, even after winning a championship. I've never seen a cat catch so much heat about this. But what does this say about Doc Rivers? You know, because I know we're focusing on LeBron, but what does this say about Boston and Doc? You know, I've been kind of watching that, and he's been quietly getting these guys, getting it healthy. So what does this say about Doc's ability and where he is as a coach? I mean, if he gets to the finals, let's say if they win, but where does this put Doc in terms of that coach and what he's doing with the team? Because I don't think he gets enough credit for what he does as a coach.
I think the biggest thing that you have to remember about Doc is that he, you know, as a player, you know, he didn't have the kind of success that he always wanted. He's you know, he's got players on his, you know, on his team that he has to admire, that he has to look at and go, man, this dude can play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the depth that, you know, this is, you know, let's put it out there. Doc wouldn't have started on this team, you know. he wouldn't have started on this team. Everybody on that team, like you might see Jordan go and watch his team, and there's a couple cats out there that even at his age, he can throw the ball out there and say, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
There ain't nobody on this team Doc can just throw the ball to and say, let's go. You know, penny
yeah.
point. Shit.
Yeah.
Because all of them, you know, all of them will rough Doc's ass up. So he has to look at this team like, you know, how do I just make sure that they all stay happy? This team has superstars on it. This team has depth. They may have age against them, but these cats were except for, you know, the young guys like Rondo, these cats were leaders on their teams,
mm-hmm.
you know, before they came together.
Yeah.
So Doc just has to stand out of the way. Doc has to look at this and say, look, you know why you're here. You know exactly why you're here.
But he had to do
my
the work with Rondo.
You,
see,
my
yeah,
job
yeah,
is to work with Rondo.
With Doc's main job, Doc is kind of in that same spot that Popovich is in, where I have a veteran team. I have a veteran core. My job is to build up my bench and build up my role players through the regular season and keep my starters fresh so that when we get into the playoffs, my guys, my vets are ready to go, and my young guys are ready to do what they need to do and play their role.
You know, he may have to remind them once in a while of who they are, but he isn't teaching them much. You know, and that's in Cleveland they're still teaching. In Orlando they're still teaching. You know, on this Boston team, Doc, you know, doesn't have a lot of teaching to do.
And see, with that, I think, and so this is kind of a thing, because I would argue the teaching he's done, and it looks like he's done, has been with the most important piece, and that's Rondo. The other pieces that came together, but, I mean, he has really worked to develop Rondo as a player. You know, they talk really about Rondo came to Boston, you know, thinking he knew it all, you know, and thinking he already knew the answer to the question, and they had to really work with him on paying attention. So there's some things that he wasn't a very good jump shooter. He's still not a great one, but he's serviceable right now, making decisions. So he has to have some impact on him.
Look at what he's doing to Nate Robinson, you know, by not playing him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nate Robinson thought he was going to come to play.
Mm-hmm.
he thought he was going to come in and, you know, every four nights he'd get 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd be lucky if every four nights he gets 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, everybody said, oh, you know, they brought him in. He was, you know, I think they thought that, you know, they were going to bring him in for that spark. And when he wouldn't play the disciplined role for this team that they needed him to play, he sits.
Yeah.
You know, they sit him down.
He's playing that D'Antoni ball.
That's right.
He's playing D'Antoni ball where you just get to run and chuck.
Right. You know, you'll see him if they're way ahead, or you'll see him when they're way behind. But if they're playing like they're supposed to be playing, you won't see him. But be honest, you didn't see Rondo playing as well as he did until they got Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Rondo stepped up his game when there was somebody on the bench that could step up and play. All of a sudden, his shot got a little better. You know, shots had always been there. But now somebody can come in and play, it's there now. You know, will he make that pass? He'll make that pass.
Yeah.
You know, they said Robinson missed, by two games, Robinson missed $1 million. If he would have played two more games, he would have made a $1 million bonus this year.
Mm. And Danny was whispering down there. You know, throwing a towel.
Danny, hey, man, what is this fool doing throwing towels up in here while people shoot free throws? somebody needs to tug on his shirt. Like, he's down in the suit. Cut that out.
You know, everybody wants to say, you know, that, you know, Boston screwed him out of $1 million. He screwed himself. If he'd have played better, Doc would have played him. He had no choice but to play him.
Nah, Danny was like, whatever you do, don't let him get that million.
Danny was like, whatever you do, don't get that million.
You know, we go, you know, act like he pulled a hamstring.
I got to ask you real quick, too, who's going to coach in Chicago?
I say they need to go get Avery. They need to go get Avery to run that team.
David?
They need to go get Avery.
David?
So you can tell Derek, go get the ball.
I don't know.
That's what they need. I think Avery would be perfect.
I think Avery would be perfect, too. I think that the problem I have, though, is that if whoever goes there, it's like the next coach of Sprewell, you know. You have to understand that the next time they put a coach in front of Sprewell, he had to understand he might get choked. You know, the next coach in Chicago has to understand that Tyson may put his hands on him. How do you get past that? How do you get past that? It's got to be in my contract. I don't care if we're on the road. I don't care if it's preseason. If John Paxton comes back there at the end of the game and puts his hands on me, I get a bonus or I get to whoop his ass. Whatever my mood is that night.
Oh, man.
That's a hard situation to be in. They got a good, fine young team. They have cap room to make some moves. You would think that they would be the ideal place to go. But in the back of your mind, every time you look up in the box and you don't see Paxton, you put your hand in your pocket.
Is he on his way down here?
Yeah. You put your hand in your pocket.
Oh, man. Hey, but I will tell you, man, Chicago is one of those teams with a bit of cap space to make a move. And what I hope they don't do, Joe Johnson needs not to get any money this offseason.
Okay, right.
I'm sorry. I'm not a hater, but that young man blew it.
That's right.
But that team needs to be blown up. The coach needs to be fired. They need to keep Al Horford, start from there, and build around Horford. Everybody else needs to go. Everybody else needs to go. Like I said, that's a professional AAU team, man. And Joe Johnson was the ringleader. And somebody's going to bad thing about it. Somebody's going to get Joe Johnson. D-Wade, LeBron money because they can, and they got the money to spend.
And that should not be Chicago. If Chicago doesn't get D-Wade, if Chicago doesn't get LeBron, Chicago should not spend that cap money.
Yeah.
Chicago should just wait.
Yeah.
Chicago should just say, look, we got it. We're going to spend it. Our fans, you know, tell the fans, call a press conference, say, look, we could spend it, but not on Joe Johnson.
But he's the kind of free agent that they would get. That's
right.
What Chicago works. He's a
right.
Cat
or Rudy Gay or somebody like
Rudy.
That who's good. Who's good? If you wanna be, you know, a fourth seed for the next 3 or 4 years, but he's not gonna put anybody over the top. Him nor Joe Johnson is gonna put a team over the top.
No, right. And it's killing me because Paxton's been able to make move after move after move. You know it's a bad sign when you fire a coach and then he ends up getting hired by another team in your division. And his team looked better than you. I mean, he had Skiles. You know, it provided you with a personality. It provided you with, a kind of approach to playing. You know, the young players. And Heinrich, I mean, I saw Heinrich at Kansas. I mean, he was a good player. But, I mean, they brought him in like he was, you know, like he was an elite player. And I'm thinking, this is a sixth man off the bench. I mean, it's somebody was saying recently, like Paxton, you know, if Paxton draft somebody that, you know, was a solid citizen and tough player in college, then you know he's making a call. But if they are able to get a player that looks like he can play, he might be questionable. And so then the new GM is making a call. I mean, it's one of those things where Paxton wants to get a whole bunch of people who play like he plays. And he forgets that Mike and Pippen and all them created space for him to do what he was doing.
He played next to Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you played next to Jordan. It was real easy to just catch and shoot.
Right. I mean, it was the reason he was open.
Right.
So the reason he's down in there. You know?
I could put up 9 points a game playing next to Mike.
Marcus, I want to ask you as our resident hoop expert on this, a lot of this stuff. When you think about, I just had to, the performance by Steve Nash. You know, where do you put him? I mean, he's an interesting guy when you start to rank all time point guard. Where would you put Steve Nash?
You know, Steve Nash has had a real, real crazy career. Like, it's to me, like, this is how I view Steve Nash, okay? If there was ever an NBA player to get popped for using performance-enhancing drugs and I had to guess who it was going to be, I would guess Steve Nash. Why? Who the hell gets better at 32? Who becomes a stud at 32? I heard a late bloomer, but damn. You know, like, I mean, who becomes this all-world point guard after being in the league for 8 years and then just becomes this all-world point guard?
Steve Pacquiao.
And he's still doing it. You know, he's still doing it. What is he now, like 36, 37?
He looked beat up the other night.
It's going to be
interesting to see how he's able to continue, you know, continue that. But, you know, Steve Nash, he's an oddity. You know, he's like a John Stockton, you know. he's just consistent. And it's hard to play somebody that can shoot. You know, if you leave him open, he'll hit it. And he's a step slower than you. He ain't leaving nobody. People run by Steve Nash. They forget he's a step slower. They forget that he can't jump.
But see, what I think people physically he is a step slower than most guys. But I think what people forget with Steve Nash is that he is a damn near flawless ball handler, and
sure,
he makes up that half a step by not mishandling the ball and being able to move wherever he wants to move. With the ball in his hands. Like, if you watch Steve Nash, he gets wherever he wants to go on the court.
Right, that's right.
Because
right,
he's the smallest ball handler. He's not quicker than most guys. He's
not at
90%
all.
90% of the guys in the NBA, he's not quicker than.
But that's his forte. He'll play off your mistake. He'll make you look really bad when you make a mistake. You know, if you don't play, if you play up on him, he'll dribble. You know, he'll cross over. He'll get some space, and then as soon as you get up there, the ball is already gone. He already dined somebody up. So that's, you know, that's how he plays. Stockton did that. He made a career out of that.
Yeah.
How can what was he, 5'10"? How can he do a give and go? How can he even complete a give and go? He got to throw the shit to the lights. Get over top of somebody.
Oh, man.
You know? Every time Malone set a screen. How did Stockton get that pass off? Except he just baited you. He created enough space, got the ball past you, and you stand there and watch Kyle shoot that ball. If you didn't get out there and guard him, he'd just spot you up.
Yep.
He'd laugh at you. He'd start backpedaling. He'd release the ball, and he's on his way back down the court. And all night long, that chases his little ass around like that. Stockton does the same thing.
Oh, man.
Play up on him, he creates his space, he gets rid of the ball. You stay he'll shoot that ball and just break your heart.
In the way Amari played, I mean, Lakers got the bigs that are just a hard thing to match up with. But, you know, you think about it, you know, what, a month and a half ago with Amari and uncertainty about where he is. And then you just think about what Gentry's done as a coach. Just another guy that just keeps people together, has a great play, you know, got the young guys playing. I mean, this is an interesting team. Grant Hill's another guy, you know, I'm a Pistons fan, you know. His Detroit run, he was doing it, and he left, and injuries and everything else, and now he's just like, you know, fine wine. He's killing it. And then watching that team play, they're fun to watch. But I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, the Lakers are just going to be a handful for him. But Nash, I watch him, and I just think, man, what is this cat going to do next? And he got one eye closed. They clowned him on TNT. They had him with Mick in the corner. Cut me, Mick. They clowned him on TNT, but he was killing the one eye closed. I turned the TV on. I got scared. I thought it was sci-fi. I said, "Is this Hoopa sci-fi channel? What's going on? Eye closed, hitting threes. This cat is. I mean, when you start ranking that, first I was like, man, he getting too much hype. But I watched him the other night, and I was just like, this cat.
I used to say the same thing about guys like Danny Ainge. You know, guys like Danny Ainge, guys like Steve Nash, you can't beat them guys. They figure out a way to beat you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may not be the best talent on the court, but they make you look silly, and then they beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't stop.
Yeah.
They come at you all night long, day in and day out, you know. I never thought Danny Ainge was a great player. What I thought Danny Ainge was a great winner, and it made a difference. Dennis
mm-hmm.
Johnson was a great player.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Ainge was a winner,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's just a whole different, you know, grit. That's why you can beat his eye up, and he just go to the side and tell Mick, "Go ahead, cut me, Mick, cut it," you know, because he's gonna come back out there and play.
And he like a little net, you know. He's frustrating the big guys. It's funny because they look frustrated. That's why he got bold, you know. You know, and Tim, you know, Tim was like trying to play it off, but you know, he's like, I'm bowing you. I'm going to hit you in the forehead, but I got you right in that eye. Just get off me, man.
Yeah.
You're irritating me. So, yeah, that's good. But as we move in, I think one of the things we want to talk about in these last 15 minutes, and again, if you're listening up, you want to figure out how to get in and get in on the conversation, it's 347-989-0844. And I know we want to get into a little bit of, you know, even though we're not in college football season, and a lot of in basketball and all these other things, college basketball, I know we're talking about with the Big Ten and some of the speculation about expansion and a lot of the conversations about other leagues expanding. So I want to make sure we covered some of those topics as well in the last 15 minutes. So, you know, our thoughts are out there for you, Marcus, or Ray, to maybe get us in the conversation around what's happening with obviously with the Big Ten and what they're talking about.
Well, I think
go ahead, Ray. You got it.
When you're looking at the Big Ten and realizing that, you know, other leagues are talking about it, the Big Ten has always been a very lucrative, will always be a very lucrative league. Any team that has an opportunity to join them has to realize that they got to bring their A game. It's the Big Ten, rather it's basketball or football. They are going to sell tickets. They are going to dictate what the BCS does. You know, they just, you know, the Big Ten is the lone reason you don't have, in my opinion, a football championship. They don't need it. They don't need it. They'll make their money doing what they do. Teams have to absorb them in the other bowl games, and when they have a national championship contender, they're happy to share them. Otherwise, they're happy just to keep what they have. But when they talk about expansion, when you look at programs like, you know, they apparently are sending an invitation to Notre Dame, they're sending an invitation to Nebraska. These teams, you know, perhaps 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they would look at it and go, well, you know, we might think about it, but their programs
right.
aren't what they used to be, and they should be welcoming the opportunity to join the Big Ten. They should be, they should have already sent that shit back.
Mm-hmm. So Ray, your commission, how many teams do you take? You're the commissioner of the Big Ten. How many teams do you take? Because that's really
you got 11 now.
How many teams are they gonna add?
You got 11 now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you can, the thing is, if I can get Notre Dame, I'm down in Nebraska going, you know, we got Notre Dame. You know, we would love to have you too.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they get Notre Dame, I would be right, or Nebraska, I would be right out to Rutgers going, you know, we got Notre Dame and Nebraska. So, you know, unlike expanding the tournament from 64 to 98, if the Big Ten can go to the Big 18, let them go. Let them go. They have
you
enough
think so?
Talent.
You think that big of a league would work in football, though?
I think
few games.
I think that if you get, and again, I'm a big proponent of a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get the Big Ten up to 18, you have the start of a national playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You have the start of a national playoffs because you have teams within the Big Ten that are not going to play each other year in and year out, that will be in contention for a BCS bowl.
And I think the other leagues
are going to have to shut them out.
And another, the other thing that's kind of the hidden thing is that, you know, as I understand some of this stuff, that also that goes into this is not only the athletics, but it's also about the connection to the academics.
Sure.
So a lot of it is too, you know, what's the quality? Because there's a lot of different relationships that come off of this association. So even if you start looking at, you know, a place like Missouri that's on here in terms of the graphics, because provosts and people like that control a lot of these conversations, not just
mm-hmm.
chancellors. So, you know, it's how does that? And those are the things that people don't talk about in terms of how they pick some of these schools. It's not everybody thinks about it from the athletic point of view, but a lot of times there's other considerations to this, you know, because there's other
sure.
kind of partnerships that come off of this.
Sure.
So when you look at these lists of schools, that's why Notre Dame, even though there some of the hard part about it is Notre Dame is a large graduate program.
Right.
So there's some other associations that come off of these relationships that goes even beyond sports, and that's often not talked about.
But I think that is the prerequisite in some of these invitations. You know, none of the schools that they even mentioned academically were unsound,
mm-hmm.
or had programs that were graduating players, or found themselves under investigations too deeply. You know, they just every one of these programs that they're talking to are as good as any of the programs that are already in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's so the Big Ten is trying, you know, and give them credit for trying to be the elite program, the elite conference in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, if they can get two teams, if they can get two teams, they will, you know, be the powerhouse of the nation. It will change all that you've ever known about college athletics. Two teams. If they get three, if they should take a Missouri or a Rutgers, you know, who knows? Who knows what'll happen? But again, as a proponent, as an advocate for a national championship, I think you have the foundation with a larger Big Ten. If that becomes the Big 12, if that becomes the Big 14,
mm-hmm.
watch out, because they'll snatch another BCS game. Mm-hmm. They'll just snatch it, and then they'll control it. I think that's why they've been so reluctant to not have a national championship, to avoid it, and to actually avoid any talk about it. But the fact that they only have the one game that they, you know, that they have one side of, you know, the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and see, that's what I see this doing. I see this really shaking the system up. I see this potential move by the Big Ten as a system shaker. Like,
right.
I mean, right now, the NCAA has nothing to do with the BCS.
Right.
I mean, they don't even run that. I mean, that's not even, like, directly connected to the NCAA. And when you have these super conferences forming, because, I mean, the ACC now talking about expanding, the Big 12 talking about it, the Pac-10 talking about expanding, you're going to have, you know, 16-team conferences. How does that, you know, how is that going to throw the bowl system out of whack?
But the funny thing about it is that all the other conferences are talking about absorbing lesser teams from other conferences.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten is going after some of the biggest conferences. And Notre Dame, which, you know, never been in a conference before. The Big Ten is saying, all right, you can fight over those smaller teams.
Mm-hmm.
You can lessen what you're doing if you want. We're going to strengthen what we do. We're going to, and then you know what they're going to do is they won't be playing Florida. They won't be playing, you know, Washington. They won't be going to UCLA unless the money is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that'd be that Pacquiao, you know, you can have, you get, it'll be a 60-40 split. It'll be a 70-30 split.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to step into our ring? Come on in here. But you ain't taking home everything. It ain't going to be an equal opportunity. You know,
it's so interesting. I mean, the business side of this is just so interesting. I mean, I think about it for football, but I think for basketball and all the other opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah.
This creates some. I mean, it also tells you that Notre Dame, if they do this, they're realizing that just the landscape's changed. You know, NBC, folks like that, the brand can't just live by itself anymore, which, you know, many of us knew, we've known for a long time, they must be realizing. And I think about your traditional powers in the Big Ten and, you know, coming from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and you know, being in Wisconsin, you know, just kind of thinking about, you know, somebody Ohio State, you know, and thinking about it's interesting for these teams because when Penn State came in, everybody thought, oh, Penn State gonna run it. Penn State took a shellacking first couple of seasons.
Sure.
So it's gonna be interesting to see.
But
you know, Michigan Ohio State game really mean what it used to mean? It's all this traditional stuff that was there. It's gonna be interesting to see how these new teams impact all of that.
You know, other than Missouri, you know, when you look at going out to the East Coast, when you look at Notre Dame, and any conference, you know, any conference in the country would look at Notre Dame or welcome them with open arms.
Yeah.
Any conference in the nation would open them. They have a national fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They have. You know, Wisconsin has a following. You know, you watch any bowl game that Wisconsin ever plays in, and there's red jerseys three quarters of the way around.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
they sell out every major sport in Wisconsin. But let's face it, ain't shit else to do in Wisconsin.
That's true.
So they're going to have a following. And if they should get a bowl game, It's in January. Wisconsin ain't the place to be in January.
Oh, no, it's not, sir.
Notre Dame has a national following. The Big Ten is looking at that going, you know, there's gold there.
Mm-hmm.
There's gold there. As down as that program is, you know, they negotiate their own television rights.
Okay.
They have been, you know, the epitome of college sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then what they have to do is make sure that if they go after Notre Dame that they get them. Because the other side of that is that Notre Dame could snub Wisconsin and join any other conference in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And just go, you know, join any other conference in the country, just snub the Big Ten and just go, you know, we can do this anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We can do this anywhere. We have the national base. We are Notre Dame. Notre Dame, as everyone has always said, you either love them or you hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the other teams that, you know, again, Nebraska. Nebraska is a powerhouse. But the Big Ten is sending out, you know, very limited invitations. Some of these other teams, you can bet, went out to their mailbox today realizing that Notre Dame got their letter yesterday. Realizing Nebraska got their letter yesterday. You know?
Went to the mailbox, hey, we ain't get in.
Right.
Look at recruit. Look at AD going in there. Looking at the mailbox. Did I get the letter, the offer? Oh,
right.
My goodness.
Oh man!
I say though, you just have to, like, they have to save face and they have to be careful with indeed Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
because you know you'd like to think that they can lure Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
if they have Notre Dame,
mm-hmm.
but let some other conference get Notre Dame, then they'll be calling Nebraska.
Yeah,
but I don't think Notre Dame, because I think the other part of it is that, and I always play this other part of it, I think for Notre Dame, particularly for their faculty and things like that, the association with the Big Ten, the opportunity to be a part of the CIC, the opportunity to grow their graduate programs, as well as there's some other reasons why it would be better for Notre Dame to be in the Big Ten than to be in some of these other conferences.
But along
with the money.
But if I'm the Big Ten, this is exactly what I'm telling Notre Dame. You've got your invitation now.
Mm-hmm.
You've got it.
Mm-hmm.
Join another conference or stay independent, and you will not get that invitation again. Once we do this, we're done. We've asked you before. We've talked about this. We've sent feelers out. If you should snub us, you'll never get this invitation again. We are going to do this. You realize we're going to do this. We are going to become the conference. And if you don't want to be a part of it, don't call us in 6 months. Don't call us in 3 years. Don't call us when you can't field the team and you don't have anybody. This is the conference. And you realize we're going to be in your backyard stealing everybody that you thought you were going to get, just like you did to us years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is, and when you go to that mailbox, you won't find a letter. You're going to find a horse's head.
That's right. That's right.
Some old soprano-type stuff.
That's right. They've been talking about Notre Dame and the Big Ten for years. It's a logical choice. It's a logical choice. But if they should snub the Big Ten one last time, somebody needs to let them know that you're out. You're now out.
Uh-huh.
These non-conference games don't mean a thing. We won't need the non-conference games. We're not going to have non-conference games. We're just going to have non-conference games against the conference that don't count. You know?
Yeah, man.
A lot like the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. A lot like the SEC. That we're, I think we're all in the house.
Yeah.
Okay. And but we're, you know, this has been a good one. It sounds like we're gonna have some hot topics, you know, for next week. You know, this has been a good conversation. You know, if you're out there,
You know, we want to have you join us in this conversation next time we're on the air. It's 347-989-0844. And also catch us on Facebook, Real Sports Guys, and catch us on Twitter. We'd love to have you join us on the air, and look forward to you same time next week, 10 o'clock. Join us and for another incredible conversation here. And the Real Sports Guys, we're doing it again here. And fellas, as usual, y'all have a blessed week. And we'll see you on the other side of the pillow.
All right, my man.
All right.